Parshas Vayakel is, I guess I say this every parsha, is a very important parsha, but every parsha really is an important parsha. The truth is, the Gemara says in Masechas Eruvin, you are not allowed to say Shmua Zu Na'a. You're not allowed to say this part of Torah is beautiful, because the implication of that statement is, this is very meaningful, this is very beautiful, but everything else that I've learned is really not so special. So that's why I like to give equal opportunity to every parsha, and I say every parsha is amazingly special and unbelievable and a lot to learn from. And what I have found is that as you go through the parsha every week, and I hope everybody in this room does go through the parsha every week and has the opportunity to learn through the Chumash every week, but as you do that, I do find that your life experiences like speak to you from the weekly parsha. And it's something that just like you have different perspectives and different thoughts as you read through different sukkim based on whatever is going on. So this week's parsha, Parshas Vayakel, we learn primarily a repeat of everything we read in Parshas Truma and Tetzaveh, which is basically about the Hakamas HaMishkan. What most of the Svarim in Halacha talk about when they look at this week's Parsha is a very specific set of Halachas, and that is Hilchos Shabbos. The Gemara says in Masechah Shabbos that we learn all of the Lamatas Avos Malachos from the construction of the Mishkan. And therefore, on Parshas Vayakel, there's a strong focus on the malachos in general. Now, it just so happens to be, and I don't think this is coincidental, it so happens that the discussion about Shabbos appears many, many, many times throughout the pages of Chumash. Number one, and of course this is the first time, is at the very end of Maaseh Bereishis, at the very end of the creation of the world, we're told, Vayom Hashvi Shabbos Vayinafesh, on the seventh day, HaKadosh Baruch Hu rested. But then we have, throughout Sefer Shmos, we have in Bishalach by the falling of the man, in Parshas Yisro by the Aseres HaDibros, Parshas Mishpatim, it's repeated again, Parshas Kisisa, after the Chet HaEgel, we're told about Shabbos again, and then in Parshas Vayakel, we have a mention of Hilchos Shabbos another time, in Sefer Vayikra, in Bamidbar, in Devarim. We have 15 times throughout the page, throughout the different Parshios of Chumash, we have 15 times different discussions about Shabbos in different contexts, and that, I think, goes to emphasize and to highlight the fact that Shabbos is a very significant part of our religion. Shabbos is something that is very important, and Shabbos is something we need to be very well aware of. Now, the challenge is that the Gemara tells us in Maseches Chagiga that Hilchos Shabbos is one of the areas of halacha that is considered kahararim hatluyim besara. What does that mean? It's like a big mountain that is holding on by a thread. Hilchos Shabbos is tremendous. There's a lot to know. And the details of Hilchos Shabbos and understanding every sif katan in the Mishnah Berurah and every application to the practical level as we know it today, it's very complicated to get Hilchos Shabbos all down pat. However, even without all the intricate details, just the general categories of Hilchos Shabbos, it's kahararim hatulim besar, means it's like a mountain that's holding on by a thread, because if you look in the original psukim in Chumash, you will find very little description about the laws of Shabbos itself. So the Torah says, Lo sasa ka malacha. Torah says, don't do malacha. The Torah says, we have to emphasize Shabbos, we have to think about Shabbos, we have to be careful about Shabbos, what the punishment for violating Shabbos is, all of that is mentioned, but the Torah never really tells us what are the actual expectations when you observe Shabbos. How is that supposed to be observed? How are you supposed to do that? That is what the Gemara means here, and that is why it's important that we give time to really be focused on what the malachas of Shabbos really are, because it is so expansive, it is so detailed, it is so comprehensive, especially when you consider all of the modern day applications of the various categories of malachos that exist on Shabbos. So, interestingly, the Torah only makes mention of four specific malachos. What are the four malachos that the Torah mentions? Anybody knows? What? Havara is one, correct? What's the pasuk? That's one. So we have the Torah specifically instructs us on the Isser, on the prohibition of Havara, which means you're not allowed to ignite, you're not allowed to light a fire on Shabbos. That's one. What are the other three? Chotzah, correct. Why? So we'll have to see in a minute. It says that you shouldn't do the malacha of Chotzah. That's in Parshas Bishalach. And then we have two others. The Torah also tells us, Sheshes Yamim Tavod, Uvayom Hashvi Tishbos, 6 days of the week you work, on the seventh day you rest. Becharish uvakatzir tishbos. Charish and katzir means, choresh means plowing, katzir means harvesting. Why are those four isurim, why are those four prohibitions the ones that are mentioned explicitly in the Chumash? What is unique about number one, Choresh, number two, Kotzer, number three, Havara in this week's Parsha, and number four, the specific mention of Hotza'ah on Shabbos. That is the question that is raised by many of the Rishonim. So the Ibn Ezra and the Rambam say, what is the reason why the Torah goes out of its way to mention Choresh and Kotzer? He says because the world used to be a much simpler place. The world used to have very few professions. It's not like today where we have specialties and then subspecialties and subs of the subspecialties and people who are specifically knowledgeable in one area or one discipline. Back then, in the days of the Chumash, what exactly were the professional opportunities that a Jewish person had? What were they able to do? Very few. Either they were a shepherd or they worked the land. What else were they going to do? What were they going to do? There were very few professions. And therefore, the Ramban and the Ibn Ezra write that the most basic, the most essential employment that a person had was Choresh and Kotzer, which means they were harvesting the fields, they were working on the fields. And yet, the Torah goes out of its way to say, even though this is my parnasa, even though this is how I take care of my family, even though this is how I live every day of my life, by working the field, the Torah still says, as essential and important as it is, b'charish b'katzer tishbos. One needs to make sure that they don't violate the prohibition of Choresh and Kotzer, because those are prohibitions. And from there we learn that even if a person has a profession where that is going to expect them to be Mechal Shabbos, you are not allowed to be Mechal Shabbos for the sake of your livelihood. Now, of course, if my life is in danger, if it's Pikuach Nefesh, that's a different story. That's not what we're talking about, right? I think we said a couple of weeks, maybe it was in the Hilchos Shabbos class, I don't remember, but I think we mentioned that either the Chazon Ish or Shlomo Zalman Auerbach writes in one place, everyone can really have the following argument. I'm a computer programmer. If I don't work on Shabbos, there's a possibility my boss won't like me. If he doesn't like me, it's a possibility he's going to fire me. Possibility he's going to fire me, it's also a possibility I won't get another job. If that happens, then I won't be able to support my family. If that happens, we're all going to die. So, you could make that cheshbon and say everything is pikuach nefesh, but you have to be reasonable. Of course, if it is an immediate pikuach nefesh or something that you have a real concern for a pikuach nefesh, that would be very different. So let's say you had people, Rahman al-Islam, in the concentration camps. They weren't given a choice on Shabbos whether they were going to work or not. They couldn't say, oh, b'chari shabbat katzer tishbos, I'm sorry, it's Shabbos today, we're not going to do work. The answer is, we don't care that it's Shabbos, you're going to do work anyway because you're being enslaved, you're being imprisoned, you're being tormented and tortured by the enemy. And therefore, they have an expectation that you're going to do whatever they say, and if not, you're going to die. So that's pikuach nefesh. But generally, we assume somebody who has a job, we don't assume that that is going to be directly linked to a pikuach nefesh situation. And therefore, the Torah says, b'charish b'katzer tishbos, to emphasize the fact that even if this is your main and essential parnasa, the Torah would not allow a person to violate Shabbos in order to make a parnasa. Number two, the Torah says here, that's in our parsha, and Chazal wonder what exactly does that mean. What does it mean? There's a famous comment of the Zohar HaKadosh on this parsha. I don't know the Zohar at all. I've never studied it. I don't know how to read the Zohar, but this is a comment that's quoted by everybody else, so it's a little bit more famous. And the Zohar HaKadosh writes in this week's parsha, al pi ha-hashkafa means something else. What is it referring to? Don't allow fighting in your home, specifically on Shabbos. Now, of course, the Zohar doesn't mean let's fight 6 days of the week and then on Shabbos let's get along. What the Zohar means is you should never fight in your home, but specifically on Shabbos. And why does he mention on Shabbos? Why is it more likely that people will fight on Shabbos than they would during the week? Because during the week, everyone's busy. Everyone's working. Everyone's involved in their own thing. Shabbos, we have too much time together. You ever realize on a three-day yontif, sometimes people get on each other's nerves? More so than other times? Why is it, Shani? What's the answer? Because it's just too much time sitting around. Not because we hate each other, we're just sitting around. Not in your house, in other people's houses. I'm saying, you observe in other people's houses what goes on. So the reason why is because we have a lot of time off, and people are going to be together, and the Zohar HaKadosh says, be careful. Don't allow the Eish HaMachlokas to take over your table. Don't allow Machlokas to become a part of your experience of Shabbos. That would be a terrible thing. Now, of course, that is not the simple understanding of the Pasuk, and it is also not the halachic understanding of the Pasuk. So the Gemara wants to know, why do we have a specific instruction of Lo Sevaru Eish V'Chomosh V'Seichem B'Yom HaShabbos? And from here the Gemara says, we learn the concept that we refer to as Chiluk Melachos. What does Chiluk Melachos mean? Chiluk Melachos, the Gemara Masech HaShabbos Daf Ayin, tells us as follows. Let's say, for example, you have somebody who does a Melacha on Shabbos B'Shogeg. Shogeg means what? accidentally. What does accidentally mean? There's a different couple of different variations of what accidentally can mean. Accidentally can either mean, I didn't know today was Shabbos, or I didn't know if I step over here that that's going to activate the lights to be turned on. There are different kinds of shogi, different kinds of ways of formulating what that means, that I did a malacha b'shogi. But whatever it means, we're not going to get into now. There is a concept of doing a prohibition on Shabbos inadvertently. B'shogi, I did not mean to violate a malacha, but it happened. What is the punishment for someone who violates a malacha b'shogi? What's the answer? Yeah, it's not a punishment. You're not, how can I be punished? I did something b'shogi. The answer is, you bring your karbon, you need a kapara. You have to do tshuva for what you've done. So therefore, you bring a karbon. What if someone violates Shabbos b'mezid? What if someone violates Shabbos b'mezid with intent? So, can they bring a karbon for that? The answer to that is no. A karbon only works, the Gemara says in the Sefer Krisos, kol shezdono kares shegagaso chatas. The time that you would have to bring a karbon chatas in the Beis HaMikdash is very limited. We don't say if you speak Lashon Hara, you have to go bring a carbon to the Beis HaMikdash. That's not the expectation. The only time somebody has to bring a carbon in the Beis HaMikdash is when, if you would have violated this prohibition, b'mezid, if I would have intentionally done this wrong, I would have been obligated to, I would have been chayiv kares. Then if I do a b'shogeg, I'm chayiv achatas. Does that make sense? Is that clear? No? Yes? Anybody know, of the 613 mitzvahs in the Torah, how many of them are you chayiv kares for? Mishnah increases. Come on. Where's the Talmud department? No?
Diminishing.
Diminishing. I know, she spoke about it. It's diminishing. Okay. So, how many of the 613 mitzvahs, if somebody would violate them, would they be chayiv kares? Only 36. You were going to guess?
36.
Just because?
Random.
Just randomly. You know, the Gemara says, Soda Hashem li Reyav. Sometimes people get special divine intervention. Seems. Okay. So who should we go out with? You have something. Tell everybody. Okay. So, Soda Hashem li Reyav. Anyway, so the Gemara says that if you violate one of the malachos of Shabbos, that would be punishable with kares. And if you do it b'shogeg, therefore you're going to have to bring your carbon chatas. Okay, so what happens? I walk into the room, and I turn on the lights, and I did it b'shogeg. I would have to bring carbon chatas. Now, we're not talking about LED lights, because that's probably not Eish, it's not Havara. Let's say you come into the room, and you actually turn on the stove, you turn on the fire. That's a real malach on Shabbos for sure. Nobody's going to deny that that's a malach. I did it b'shogeg. I thought it was Sunday morning. I didn't realize it was Shabbos. I would have to bring your carbon chatas. What if on a Shabbos, I did 20 malachos? So I turn on the lights, and I turn on the oven, and I end up doing all kinds of different things, and I'm writing a paper for class, and I'm doing everything. And I walk outside, and I have things in my pockets, and there's no Erev, and I'm driving my car. I do 20 different things throughout the duration of Shabbos. How many chatas will I have to bring after Shabbos is over? Would you say one? Would you say 20? Well, on the one hand, if I violate 20 different things, I should have to bring 20. But on the other hand, they're all under one heading. What is the one heading? Lo sasa kol malacha. You're not allowed to do malacha on Shabbos. So maybe I should say, well, all of that is subsumed under one, and therefore I should bring one karbon chatas that will then take care of everything I've done wrong. The answer to that, says the Gemara, is no. We learn from the pasuk in our parsha, lo sebaru eish b'chamosh v'sechem yom ha-Shabbos, that there's a concept of chiluk malachos. Chiluk malachos means each malacha should be looked at as an individual problem, as an individual prohibition. Even though it's a subcategory of lo sasa kol malacha, which is a general heading, we assume that the same way the Torah singles out havara, so too the Torah would have singled out each one of the malachas, and that is to teach us that if somebody violates many malachas on Shabbos, they will have to bring many, many different karbanos. Okay, so that's why number three. So again, we have Charish v'Katzir. The Ramban and the Ibn Ezra say the reason why those are mentioned is because it's to highlight the fact that even if this is my Parnassah, I'm not allowed to do it on Shabbos. Number two, we have Havara, which tells us that Havara, l'chalik yatzos, that there's an idea of chiluk malachos. And number four, we have this idea of Hotzah being mentioned as well. Ayetze ish me mekamo Shvi. Why is that mentioned? The reason why, the Gemara says, is because Hotza is what we refer to as a Malacha Grua. Hotza is a very uncomplicated Malacha. Normally, all of the Malachos, with the exception of Hotza, all of the Malachos, there's some outcome that happens as a result of what I've done. Meaning, Bona means, I used to have two different items, and now I put them one on top of the other, and I put plaster in between. Now I have a house. I have a piece of paper and a pen. It used to be just a paper and a pen. Now I use the pen to make a change in the paper. V'chahena v'chahena. Everything else is like that as well. Tofer means I have two different pieces of fabric. Now I take a string and I sew them together. That would be a malacha of tofer. All of those are examples of where a constructive act happened and something was changed as a result. What happens when I do hotza? What happens when I do hotza? I have a tissue in my pocket. I walk down the block. Then I come back. Nothing happened. I didn't change the item. It didn't undergo anything over the process of the malacha that I did. So I would have said, if it were up to me, again, it's not up to me, but if it were up to me, I would have said, Hotza can't be a malacha on Shabbos. That's not, nothing's happening. All the other malachos are ones where something actually happens, but here nothing happens. So I would have said, Hotza is out of the category of malacha. But yet, the Torah goes out of its way to say, for whatever reason, even though Hotza is a malacha grua, still, we would say that it is considered to be a part of the malachos on Shabbos. Yeah? Question?
Just by Havara, like, couldn't any malacha be chosen?
Yes. Yes. Any malacha could have been chosen, but this one is chosen. There are reasons, but yes. Actually, one of the opinions in the Gemara about Havara is to tell us that even if you're doing it in Makam Mitzvah for, let's say, I think this is Rav Yossi's opinion, even if you're giving Misas Bezen, right, so even if you're lighting the fire because you're doing the mitzvah of administering Misas Bezen, it's not allowed either. Anyway, there's discussions about why Havara is singled out. But the point being, the reason why one of the malachas was singled out is to teach us that there is a idea of chiluk malachas, which means that each malacha stands individually on its own and will be punishable on its own, will be chayev echatas on its own, and that is important to know. Now, how do we delineate? How do we define what the 39 categories of malachas actually are? Now, the truth is, if it were up to me, I would have said, I probably would not have chosen any of these malachos. I probably would not have defined them as the way the halacha does. And it's not necessarily determined by which ones require the most exertion of energy. It's not necessarily the way it works. So say, for example, if I carry a paperclip in my pocket and I walk outside without an Erev, that is defined as a malacha of Hotza on Shabbos. And yet, if I carry a table and chairs that are very heavy, but it's inside of my house, or inside of my backyard, and I carry some heavy table from one side of the backyard to the other, I would be in no violation of Shabbos. So why is that? I should have said the opposite. I should have said that if I'm exerting a lot of effort and energy, then I should be chayev, and if not, I shouldn't be. But obviously, that's not the way that it is determined. We know that when it comes to the malacha of bishul b'Shabbos. So if I reheat something on Shabbos, I'm not violating a malacha. If I cook something lechatchila, then I am violating a malacha. So how do you determine? How do you figure out what's considered cooking and what is not? Who decided that reheating something is not considered to be a malacha? Let's say extending a leaf of a table on Shabbos, the Shulchan Aruch says, would be permissible. But yet reattaching a leg to a table when the leg fell off, right? If you have four legs of a table and the fourth leg, let's say, got unscrewed, you wouldn't be allowed to screw it back on. So why is that? Why should that be the case? Why should I be allowed to put a leaf into a table whereby I'm extending the usage of the table, and yet putting a leg onto the table would not be allowed because that would be considered bona? How do you delineate? How do you figure that out? So these are somewhat inconsistent, if you think about it in the whole, and somewhat arbitrary. How did Chazal formulate the list of the Lamates Shabbos Malachos? Where did the magic number of 39 actually come from? So the Gemara Maseches Shabbos Daf Mem Tes tells us that this comes from a drasha in the Psukim that we learn from the construction of the Mishkan, which is listed in our parsha. The Torah says that Moshe Rabbeinu was instructed to build the Mishkan, Bezalel was involved in that construction as well. And what we're told is that in doing so, there were many different activities that were necessary in order for the Mishkan to have been built. And that means that any activity that was required for the functioning Mishkan to be constructed is something that we are not allowed to do today on Shabbos. So say, for example, they had to dye certain materials in order to have the Urios HaMishkan created, in order to make all of the different covers of the Mishkan. So therefore, we have a Malach on Shabbos of dyeing. not of one passing away, of dying, of putting material inside of a die, that would be a malach. Is there a different word for that? Dying, is that the right word? Yeah? Okay, sorry. So that's in terms of how the malachas are determined. And the basic determination comes from whatever it was that was done in the days of the Mishkan to construct the Mishkan is what we are not allowed to do today. In Parshas Vayakel, you find that Shabbos comes right before the instruction of Malachas HaMishkan. In Parshas Kisisa, the Torah has Shabbos right after. It's like the epilogue to the construction of the Mishkan. Ach es Shabsosai Tishmoru Umikdashi Tiro. The Torah puts Shabbos and Beis HaMikdash together. Says Rashi, what is that all about? Why do we have a connection between Shabbos and the Mishkan? Why are they together? So Rashi says that this is to teach us She'eino Docheas HaShabbos. You know, Jews have been waiting for many thousands of years to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. Imagine if Mashiach would come and he would tell us to build the Beis HaMikdash. We would have so much excitement. Everybody, the same way I assume in the days of the Mishkan, it was called Chacham Lev. Every individual who had some kind of talent, who knew how to use their hands well, who knew how to crochet, and who knew how to paint, and who knew how to do whatever, gave up their talents to the building of the Mishkan. I assume it's going to be the same in the days of the building of the Beis HaMikdash. I don't know. I assume that's what it's going to be. And yet the Torah says, as excited as you are, we are told, Ach es shabsosai tishmoru mikdashi tiro, which means that Shabbos is more important than building the Mishkan. Anybody know? Anything else that's more important than building Beis HaMikdash? The Gemara says in Megillah, what else is more important than building the Beis HaMikdash? Pikuach Nefesh, of course. Okay, what else? Torah what? So you're saying, who's going to build the Beis HaMikdash? Think about that for a second. Let's take Israel today the way it is. Who's going to build the Beis HaMikdash? So you're telling me the 300,000 Haredim that are in the Yeshiva system are not going to build the Beis HaMikdash. So who's going to build it? Everyone else? Maybe. Right? So the Gemara says the truth is that Tinoka Shel Beis Rabban, the learning of children, is something that we would not stop for the building of the Beis HaMikdash. Which is an amazing statement. The Gemara says that the learning of Tinokas Shel Beis Rabban is something that is so pure, that is so valued. Even though building of a Beis HaMikdash is extremely valuable, there's a value that's even greater than that. And that is the learning of Torah by Tinokas Shel Beis Rabban. Something to think about in Mirz Hashem when you teach your own children. Just realize, what you're doing in teaching your own children is more important than building a Beis HaMikdash. It's kind of amazing. Okay. So Rashi says the reason why Shabbos and Beis HaMikdash are next to each other is because it's as a reminder that everyone should understand that as important of a value as it is to us as a people to have a Beis HaMikdash, Shabbos is still more significant and Shabbos is even more important. Okay, but there emerges a very powerful connection between Shabbos and the Mishkan, and one has to explain what that is all about. And I think the answer is as follows. What exactly was the aspiration of building a Mishkan? Why was a Mishkan supposed to be built? The answer to that is that it was to remind us that you can live in a profane world, but there is a possibility of creating spirituality in a world of profanity. You can live in a secular world. You can live amongst people who have secular values. You can live in a world where people don't appreciate what you stand for. And you can build something that is considered Kodesh Kadashim. How can that be? Why is that room different than my house? Why is that room different than my living room? The answer is because we understand there's something called Kedusha in the world. There's something called Kedusha Samakom. There's another thing called Kedusha Zazman. And the same way that the Mishkan was an oasis of spirituality in the middle of a profane world, so too it reminds us that Shabbos is an oasis of spirituality in Sheishes Yimei HaMaaseh. Shabbos is the same thing. Shabbos is the opportunity for a Jew to understand that we do have a possibility to close ourselves off from everything else and to reconnect with the things that are most important to us, with the values that are most critical to who we are. And that, I think, is really the understanding of why we have a connection between the creation of the Mishkan and the observance of Shabbos. It's just to remind us that Shabbos every week is meant to be that reminder of everything that we can build, of everything that we can do. You know, the Kohen Gadol goes into the Kodesh HaKadoshim on Yom Kippur. So what's he doing? He's doing the three Kedushas all at once. He's going, he is the holiest person, so there's Kedushas HaZman, there's Kedushas HaMakom, he's going into the Kodesh HaKadoshim on the holiest day of the year. Correct? So there's all three of them. There's Kedushas HaMakom, Kedushas HaZman, and Kedushas HaAdam. All three of those people, all three of those factors come together, which is highlighted by the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur. But it's something that we're able to do every day of the year and every week when we have the opportunity to remind ourselves that there is a possibility to reconnect with everything that we represent. So there are different malachos that we are aware of. Of course, we don't have a chance today to go through an overview of all the lamatas of his malachos, but what I think is important to understand is that sometimes the actual malacha will be defined by whatever it was that was done in the Mishkan. It's not just the category of malacha, but the way the malacha is done as well. So let me give you an example. There's a big discussion in the Yerushalmi in Perek Lagado, that's the Masechta Shabbos. The Yerushalmi has a question whether we should say that a binyan l'sha'a is nechshav kibinyan. That if I build something temporarily, we know that there's a malacha on Shabbos of bona. You're not allowed to build. Now, bona in the classical sense means I build a house and it's going to stay there for a long time. Of course, that would be a violation of bona. What if I build something and it's only going to be of temporary nature? So, what are we talking about? Talking about Lego? What? Oh, 1 second. So let's say you're talking, let's give the extreme, right? So if I build a house, that's of course bona. What if I go to the other extreme? I have a bunch of blocks in my playroom and I put one on top of the other. That's of course not bona. That's nothing. That's going to be knocked down. When another kid runs by it, the whole thing is going to be knocked down. So that's not bona. For sure not bona. Now what about something in the middle? A binyan l'sha. What would an example of a binyan l'sha be? I would say, let's say a tent. I put up a tent on Shabbos. Now, everybody knows the tent is not going to be there forever. I put it up maybe for a day, maybe for 2 days, maybe for a week. I'm camping somewhere. Nobody's going to leave the tent there forever. So what would you say? Is binyan l'sha nechshav kibinyan or not? And the answer that the Yerushalmi writes is, having a temporary binyan, building something temporarily, is called bona. How do I know? Because we look back at the Malachas HaMishkan. How so? When the Mishkan was built, we know that it was built and it was taken down. And it was built again and taken down. Every time the Jewish people traveled in the desert, they had to dismantle the entire Mishkan and then put it up again when they got to the next location. So therefore, if that was considered to be a malacha of bona, if that was considered to be building, even though the understanding was it's only going to be built temporarily and then we're going to take it down, then that can tell us how to define the malacha of bona in general. The malacha of bona in general means that I'm building something with the intention that at some point it's going to be taken down, and that too can be considered a malacha of bona b'Shabbos. The very practical example would be, as Racheli pointed out, the Nodeb Yehuda and the Chasam Sofer in the 1700s, 1800s have a discussion about opening an umbrella on Shabbos. So it's raining outside today. Nobody likes to get wet, so am I allowed to open an umbrella on Shabbos? Now, nobody opens an umbrella with intention that it's going to stay open forever. Everybody who opens an umbrella understands, I'm opening it now, I'm going to close it when I get to the location where I am. But right now when I open an umbrella, I'm basically building something that wasn't there before. I'm creating a structure that was not here before I opened it. So the question becomes, am I allowed to do that on Shabbos or perhaps not? And the answer is that's what they're discussing. Would you say, question number one is, would you say that binyan l'sha is nechshav kibinyan? Would you say that a temporary building is considered to be a building as well, or perhaps not? So there are many, many different variations of this where the malacha itself is defined by what it is that was done on the Mishkan. Take for another example, the prohibition of borer on Shabbos. Borer means you're not allowed to separate two items that are mixed together. Now, the exact parameters of borer are very complicated. And when do we say that something that's separated from something else is considered a malacha and when it's not is a discussion for a whole another time. But question number one is, when do they ever do borer in the Mishkan? When was it necessary? When was it required to do borer in the Mishkan? What? When they were making bread. So Rabbeinu Hananel says, when they had to make the menachos, when they had to make the flour for the karban, so Rabbeinu Hananel says that they used to sift through all the flour to make sure that they had only wheat and no pebbles. Rashi says, that maybe that's true, but Rashi says, when they had the ketores, they had to sift out through the incense. Either way, they have to sift through a bunch of different items to use whatever it was that was necessary inside of the Mishkan. So it says the Gemara Masechet Shabbos that you're allowed to be borer la'alter ochel mitoch psolas biyad. You'd be allowed to be borer if I'm doing the act of separation right now for a purpose that I'm going to use right away. Ochel mitoch psolas biyad. As long as I'm taking the good from the bad and I'm doing it with my hand. Now, what is that all about? The Rishonim asked, why should that be allowed? I'm basically doing the same thing that they were doing in the Mishkan. They separated two items and now I'm separating it. So what if I'm doing it with my hands or I'm doing it with the Kli? The answer, says the Rashba, is because it is not Doma to the Mishkan. I'm doing this Derech Achila. I'm doing this because I'm trying to eat and therefore it is not similar to the way it was done in the Mishkan. And this is a recurrent theme that we find in many different areas, that if it's not in the way that it was done in the Mishkan, it would not be defined as a malacha. One of the examples that is given of that is what the Torah says in Sefer Shmos as well, Lasos b'chol malachas machsheves. What are we told? Bezalel in our parasha built the Mishkan. And he did it al yidei malachas machsheves. Malachas machsheves means he was calculated, he was deliberate in everything that he did. There was nothing that just happened by mistake. Bezalel thought through everything he was supposed to do, and he did it intentionally. And that is also a guiding principle in the way that we look at Malachos of Shabbos. So when we say that something has to be done with deliberate intent, if something is done without Malachos Machshavos, it's not called a Malach on Shabbos. If something is done with Malachos Machshavos, it is a Malach. Let me give you an example of this. The Gemara says in Maseches Baba Kama, anybody know about the Malach of Zoreh? Zoreh means winnowing. Anybody knows what winnowing even is? What? Right, so winnowing, we're not so familiar because we don't work in these types of jobs usually, but winnowing means when they used to take the flour, when they used to take the wheat, throw it up in the wind, and then? The wind separates it. So I ask you, what am I doing? How is that a malach? No anymore? What am I doing? What did I do here? Let's retrace the steps. I have wheat. I put it into whatever it is. I throw it up into the air. Is that a malach on Shabbos? I'm not allowed to throw a ball in the air? You're not allowed to?
No, you are allowed.
You are allowed to. Okay, so far, whatever I've done is only throwing something into the air. That's the same as taking a ball and throwing it into the air. What's the difference? Now what happens, Emily? Now I threw it in the air, and then what's the next step?
Separates.
It separates. How does it separate? By the wind. So, when do I violate the malacha?
I'm going to guess it's with the intention.
But I didn't do anything.
But you did it. You threw it up in the air with the intention that it was.
Oh, so there the Gemara says, this is a very interesting case. Ask the Gemara, how can I be chayav for Zorah? How can I be chayav for winnowing? I didn't do anything. It's the same as throwing a ball up in the air. Answers Emily, which is also quoted in the Gemara. Answers the Gemara that it's malachas machsheves. What the Torah cares about is, what was my intention? When I threw it up in the air, I had every intention that the wind was going to come and separate it. And therefore, I violated malacha because that would be defined as the manifestation of everything I was thinking about, of everything I wanted to happen. Let me give you another example. The Mishnah Berurah says in Simon Shin Tes Zayin in Hilchos Shabbos. He quotes a Rambam. Rambam writes in Perek Yud of Hilchos Shabbos, Halacha Chav Beis, listen carefully. Misha Omeid Bifnei Atzvi. Let's say I'm standing in front of a deer, right? Now, everybody would love to catch a deer at some point in their life. No? It'd be very exciting. So how do I catch a deer? Now, of course, on Shabbos, there's a malach of tzedek. Not allowed to catch a deer, so I can't put out a trap. And I can't, you know, try to get the deer to go in my house and then slam the door. So what do I do? So says the Rambam. Let's say I'm standing in front of a deer, v'hiviloso, and I scare the deer. Right? You know they say deer in the headlights? What's the expression deer in the headlights? It means when a deer gets scared, it freezes. So it's very hard to catch a deer because the deer runs very quickly. So here's what I do. On Shabbos, I live in some outdoor area somewhere, and I really want to catch a deer. So what do? I see a deer runs by. I shout at the deer. The deer stops, takes a few seconds. In the interim, my dog is able to go and bite the deer's leg, and therefore it's going to trap it that way. The deer can't run anymore if it's injured. Am I in violation of Malacha on Shabbos or not? What do you say?
Yes.
Doesn't happen in North Woodmere?
Not usually.
No, not usually. Okay. So what do you say? You say yes?
Yeah.
How could it be? What did I do?
I mean, again, your attention.
So the Rambam says, I would be chayiv for tzeda. How can I be chayiv for tzeda, asked the Mishnah Berurah? What did I do? What? Yeah. How can it be? Ask the Mishnah Berurah. How can it be that the Rambam says I'd be chayiv for trapping a deer in that case? I didn't do anything. Am I allowed to go out into the forest and start shouting? Of course I'm allowed to. That's not a malacha. But now, says the Mishnah Berurah, the reason why I'm chayiv is because this is the way normal hunters trap animals. They do something to scare the animal. Once the animal is scared, then they have something else that's able to go and catch the animal. I can't catch the animal on my own. So since this is derech hatzayadim, since this is the normal way to do a malacha, and this is my absolute intention when I'm screaming at the deer, it's because I want it to stop, and I want my dog to be able to go and bite the deer and catch it. Therefore, I would be in violation of a malacha, because that is called meleches machsheva. So this is a guiding principle. What we find in our parsha, a meleches machsheva very much defines when something would be a malacha, and when perhaps it would not be defined as such. So that is a very important issue to be aware of as well when we talk about malachos on Shabbos. We know that if one does a malacha on Shabbos al yidei shinui, if someone does a malacha in a way which is a very unusual manner, that would not be defined as a malacha d'oraisa, that would be defined as an iser d'rabbanan. That would be a rabbinic prohibition. Because, why is there a rabbinic prohibition to do things in an unusual manner? Because I could basically look around my house and I can do everything that I would do otherwise during the week, just do it al yidei shinui. Right, I would just turn on the lights with the back of my elbow, and I would be able to do to write, you know, with other fingers or whatever it is. I would be able to do every single malacha, and that would be considered a terrible violation of Shabbos. So, say for example, somebody who writes with their left hand, that would not be a biblical prohibition; that would be rabbinic. Now, there is an exception to that. What's the exception? Where do we have a malacha that even when you do it al yidei shinui, it would not be considered an issur d'rabbanan either? It would be considered nothing at all.
Medicine.
Medicine what?
Like, with the different categories of cholera. Like, when you're able to ask the doctor to do it, or to or the body to suffer.
Yeah, so what do you want to bring out from medicine? About a shinui?
Just like that it wouldn't apply.
Oh, meaning you're saying, if you have to take care of a cholera on Shabbos, don't do it like a shinui. Okay, that's one. Where would we find, by a malacha, normally, as we mentioned, there's a malacha d'oraisa, which is the way the malacha is supposed to be done. Then we have a step down, is an issur d'rabbanan, if you do it al yidei shinui. When would we have a case where there is no step two? Where even if I do it al yidei shinui, it is heter gamur?
D'oraisa.
Meaning?
Like, before we started our mention, we
turn off. Ah, okay, good guess. Okay, what else? Let's hear another one. Anybody else? The one exception that we have is by bishul. So what's the normal way to cook? The normal way to cook is in the oven, on the fire. What if I do bishul b'chama? Meaning what? I'm in the Sahara Desert. It's boiling hot. I take an egg, I crack it on the windshield of my car, and it becomes a an omelet, thank you, just by being in the burning hot sun on my windshield. Now, I would never eat such an egg, it's gross. But would that be defined as a malach of bishul b'shabbos or not? No, why not?
That's not a normal way to cook.
Okay, but it's not a normal way to do anything. So why don't I say, the same way, you're not allowed to turn on the lights al yidei shinui on Shabbos, it's asur midrabbanan, I can't go to the lights and turn it on with the back of my hand. And I'm not allowed to do anything al yidei shinui. I can't say that, oh, hotzah al yidei shinui is mutter. So if I don't have an Erev outside, as long as I carry it under my armpit, that's fine. Because that's not the normal way to carry things. Right? If I carry something on my head, it's not the normal way we carry things, so it should be allowed. No, we don't say that. So why would this be the exception? Why would bishul b'chama be an exception? So the Gemara seems to say, because bishul, it is so far from the realm of possibility to cook in such a way, there is no regular average person that you know in the entire world who cooks by using the sun. That's not normal at all. And therefore, I would say, Bishul Bechama is something that is so far removed from the definition of a malacha that I would say there is no possibility of saying that it should ever be defined as Bishul. It's too far from the norm. It's not just Ali Shinui, it's two steps removed from a Shinui. And therefore, we would say that that would be the exception to the rule, where if I did it Ali Shinui, it would not be defined as a malacha at all. Okay, yeah. Right. That would be a malacha. That would be. Right, correct. So I think it would for sure be an iser anyway. Because when you look at Bishul, you ask yourself, what, I mean, this is not the full answer, because you can't just say, what's the outcome? Because there, the outcome is the same. I'm going to have my omelet just because I cracked it in the middle of the desert where it was boiling hot. So how do you, The answer is it is a malacha, but I have to figure out how to formulate why that would be the case. What should the difference be? I don't know. That's a good question. That's a very good question. What should the difference be if I turn a pan upside down? I don't know. I've got to think about that.
Because you can't